Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Well, big day yesterday. I'd like to report record results for Six Colors live stream of Apple's results.
We've never had more people on a results live stream than yesterday, Jason.
No, never.
Never.
Because we never did it before, but we did it.
Yeah, let's not split hairs.
It was also our worst ever.
I like to focus on the positive.
Well, I'd like to give people a roadmap.
I'm sorry, we can't do that.
No, okay. Well, then I don't know where we're going, Dan. How will I get to our destination if I don't have a roadmap?
We know where we're going. We're just not telling people where we're going.
Oh, I see.
It's a minor difference.
I see.
Yeah.
It is. They asked about Apple's roadmap, and it so delighted, apparently, Tim Cook that he kept mentioning the roadmap afterward with a chuckle. It made me laugh. Anyway, we did a live stream, and I think what we're going to do, so we talked for like 45 minutes about Apple's big financial results, and although I was talking about charts that you can't see in a podcast because it's a podcast, I think what I'm going to do is when we're done talking here, we'll just do the little beeps and all that, and then I'll play the audio of our thing from yesterday, because if you want to hear us talking about it and you're not a YouTube kind of person, but you are, obviously, because you're listening, a podcast kind of person, we'll put the audio in. You can skip it if you already heard it, or if you prefer to watch it on video where you can see our smiling faces and charts.
Oh, the charts.
But any second day thoughts from you about Apple stuff?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. You always go and look for sort of tea leaves because it's one of the few, as we talked about, few opportunities to really get behind the curtain, aside from sort of actual releases and announcements of products. And so looking a little bit at the kind of stuff that Tim Cook was talking about and talking about the interest in, I don't know, it's always interesting to figure out, like, where do they see opportunities, right? Like, they're already huge. They could, you know, do pretty well just by doing what they're doing. But, like, where do they see opportunities for growth? And I think, you know, there's definitely a couple stuff, and it's stuff that we've heard them talk about before, whether it's AR or health or 5G.
It's just early innings for 5G.
It's early innings. So I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued in thinking about that, but I don't know. This one, I feel like there were a few tidbits here and there, but this one seemed fairly cut and dried overall. I don't know if that was your impression too, but
yeah.
It seemed pretty flat. Not a lot of stuff.
For an all-time record, it was not that exciting, and I think part of the reason is Apple's continued, I don't know, somebody at some point had a conversation saying, you know, we do a bunch of stuff that's not legally required anymore.
Right.
And they said, oh, let's not do it then. Right. Let's do the minimum that's legally required. And they got rid of the unit sale numbers, and they amped up the amount of scripted that they do during their conference call with analysts, which is not legally required. But I think the idea there is you want to tip your cap to the Wall Street community and show respect for your investors. And so they do it. But like, it's very scripted. It's very locked down, even more than it was before. There are tidbits. There were not that many tidbits this time. I think they actually, the one that struck me on a second day of thinking about it is that they, even though they gave a number about, which we talked about on the live stream, the six, toss off the number six, and they meant $6 billion in sales that they weren't going to get because of supply chain constraints. They didn't do that this time. They didn't give a number at all. They just said it'll be less. And so it's like, no, we decided that was too much information for you guys. We're gonna scale it back. So it was all very constrained, and they said, you know, we're gonna grow but not by as much, decelerating growth, and we're gonna have a record quarter again next quarter, and the supply chain issues are still there, but they aren't as bad as they were. It was just, you know, it was for the best quarter they've ever had, it was a very restrained kind of event. So, you know, we didn't get as much info out of it, and that's fine. It's, you know, they don't have to give us info. It's just nice when we get it.
It's nice. We like it. We like the good old info.
Purely on a selfish basis. So anyway, another record quarter. That's, what can you say?
What can you say? Indeed. It's
Yeah.
Not that much to add to it.
We got this was actually a big week after several weeks where you and I just worked on shortcuts and Apple scripts. Things happened this week. Apple finalized their most recent OS releases and put them out the door. 12.2 for macOS, 15.3 for iOS and iPadOS, and there's a watchOS update and a tvOS update and all that. And then it turned around almost immediately and released beta versions of macOS 12.3, iOS 15.4, lots of things in there. I haven't installed them yet because we kind of were doing something yesterday with the results and stuff, and so I didn't want to do that. But I think I'm going to install them today. Universal Control?
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited. I installed the beta. I've been on the leaving both my iPad and MacBook Air on beta updates so that I could, in expectation of Universal Control. And I updated my iPad yesterday and then realized that the Monterey update is not in public beta yet because my iPad's on the developer beta, but my MacBook's on the public beta. So, wow.
Well, just put the laptop on the developer beta.
I need to bother someone about it because I don't have a developer beta. I'm subsisting on the kindness of strangers.
Oh, I see. I see. For your iPad.
Not
use.
Strangers. Well, I kindness will of friends.
But. Yeah, exactly. The I'm looking
I'm sure
forward
it'll
to
be
out
too in like the next few days.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Federico Vitici was showing off using it. I actually think that I might get the most out of it when I travel because then I've got like a smaller laptop screen and an iPad and now they can kind of work in harmony. But I'm looking forward to trying it. It's a fun idea. And we got in the developer beta for iOS, there is a new, took them long enough, but here it is. It is Face ID for masks where apparently cranking up the, using just sort of the area around your eyes to identify you uniquely. And they say it's not as accurate, not as secure as full face, and that you do need to do training for glasses. If you wear glasses sometimes, you need to train the pairs of glasses that you wear. But apparently it works. So people who don't have an Apple Watch where there's the sort of Apple Watch mask unlock thing now have this other way of doing a mask-based face unlock.
And even if you do have an Apple Watch, this does some stuff that the Apple Watch does not. Like it lets you unlock stuff that is not just unlocking your phone.
Apple Pay
and apps that require authentication, basically.
The Apple Pay one
huge.
Is the one that gets me is I'm at a store and I've got a mask on and I've got my watch and then I do Apple Pay on my phone and I'm like, and then I do Apple Pay on my watch, hopefully. Because the watch, I can just go doot doot and it does it. But the Apple Pay on the phone is like, no, now I need your password. God.
Right. Yeah. And it's sometimes convenient. Like I do that juggle because I was just at the grocery store. We're about to have a big storm here. So I was stocking up a little last minute stuff and I had to go scan the barcode. It was at Whole Foods and you have the Amazon Prime barcode on the phone. And I had to scan that on my phone, and then I got to put my phone away to double click the thing on my watch,
right.
And then use my watch to pay. It's like, well, I already was holding a device that could pay. It would be a much bigger pain.
So this is it's funny. This is the, dare I say it, the mid-cycle feature update. Right? Like they do are like sliding in very small changes. And then there's this. Also, among the other things that's in here, the kernel extensions used by Dropbox and OneDrive to do all sorts of, is the file local or is it synced shenanigans, which Apple said would be deprecated at some point during the Monterey cycle, is deprecated in 12.3. So if you're using Dropbox or OneDrive, and they both are coming out with beta versions, but basically they need to migrate to the same API that iCloud Drive uses, and it works differently, but it is in the system, so it's got advantages. But the old way of doing like leave this folder not synced and that kind of thing is kind of out the window. So that's a thing that's in the beta, and what's the other big thing that's in the beta that is Python 2,
oh yeah, it's gone,
which has been warned 3 years ago that they were going to take Python 2 out, and Apple has basically said they're not going to install a bunch of scripting stuff and keep it maintained in current versions, and Python has moved on long ago. Python 2.7 or whatever it is not in the support window anymore. I mean, like, it is over. And so in 12.3, Python 2 is gone. And they still have their basically a stub for Python 3 that if you try to call Python 3, what it does is say you need to install the Xcode extras, which anybody can install, is my understanding. And it's basically Apple's little package of command line things that are extra. And it'll install Python 3 then. But there are apparently some apps out there that just assume Python 2 is on the system. And 3 years ago, Apple said, don't do that because it's not going to be there. And with 12.3, when it comes out, it won't be there. So fortunately, after the 3 years of warning, or in the case of Dropbox and Microsoft, 9 months of warning, there is now a developer beta process that leads to the public beta process that leads to finally a shipping version. So there's still a little bit of time here, but there's just a lot in this. This is I wonder if internally they just have a milestone that is the mid-cycle feature update. I wonder.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, we often seem to see this because, as you said, it's a good mid-cycle is about where we're at, right? It's January, starting in June or so. Obviously, we're going to be thinking about the next version of iOS.
It's not mid-cycle for the OS's life, but it is. We are midway between the announcement of Monterey and the announcement of Monterey's replacement, right?
Exactly. And, you know, everything's got a little bit of lag time. And obviously, internally, they're already working on the next versions of all the software. It's just a question of when sort of the resources get probably reallocated and shifted from like people working on current releases to people, you know, working away on the next big platform release. But I think it seems like in once in every cycle, Jason, there comes a release that is, you know, actually adding a bunch of new features rather than just fixing bugs and stuff like that. I can think of no better signal of it either than the fact that it adds all the new emoji as well.
Yes.
It's like that. You gotta want to get somebody to update their phone, add some new emoji. That's how we do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the grand motivator is all the new emoji are there too, which I didn't even mention, but there it is. It was a real moment to see the Emojipedia post not be by Jeremy Burge. Although Jeremy was tweeting about emoji, which made me laugh because it's like you can take the boy out of Emojipedia, but he's still an emoji man at heart.
That's right.
At emoji heart.
Emoji heart. Emoji yes. Heart hand symbols.
Uh-huh. Down in Australia. He's back home in Australia right now too. Jeremy is great. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Jeremy Burge, a very nice fellow who's no longer running Emojipedia because he sold it. Bravo, Jeremy. So
just making TikToks and driving boats.
So what's exciting about this is that even though it's beta and then it's going to be public beta, so it's not for everybody yet, it is what is going to hit everybody in a little bit, and probably a lot of our listeners are going to get, if they're not on the developer beta, are going to get on the public beta at some point. And I feel like, especially since nothing has been going on, I'm excited to try this stuff out and write about it a little bit just experientially of like, oh, this is how it works and this is a thing that I noticed. And I know it's early days, but it's been real quiet. So I'm excited that this is actually happening now because it's something for us to dig into a little bit as we wait for whatever Apple's next announcement is.
Right. Yeah. And it seems like there are some like rumors floating around about when and what that might be. I know Mark Gurman has posted a bunch of stuff about what's coming up, and I'm interested to see sort of like how these rumors shake out. I know both you and I are eagerly anticipating a larger iMac at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem assured at this point.
Yeah, Gurman is sort of, I think he believes now that Apple's just going to do a massive release of hardware in the fall.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I believe that entirely. It may in fact be that it's a massive release of hardware in the fall, and the things they were intending to release in the fall, some of those are going to be released, you know, in the winter, push everything back because of the supply chain stuff. But I would be disappointed. I don't want to say I don't believe him because his sources are generally pretty good. I would be disappointed if there weren't a new bigger iMac in the spring time frame. It feels like, you know, you don't want to leave it laying out there until the very end of the transition. I do think that the two things that are floating around are on the Mac side are new models, he said, with the M1 Pro chip in it. And it's unclear whether that's an iMac Pro or whether it's just them putting that chip in some lower end models. Like it would be a Mac Mini with a M1 Pro in it, for example, would be perfectly reasonable. And I continue to believe that a high-end configuration of the existing 24-inch iMac with an M1 Pro chip in it, it would also be reasonable. I think that they could do that. And then it's like, if you want this performance and you don't want a bigger iMac, you don't need to buy a bigger iMac. You can buy this one, and it's great.
Sure.
But beyond that, like, I mean, yeah, there's like iPhone SE and stuff, but it's not an iPad Air update because it needs one. But like, I don't know. Do we wait? Is the M2, which is supposed to be in the MacBook Air, is that a new MacBook Air? Is that going to be a fall thing instead of a spring thing? Maybe. I don't know. There's just it seems a little bit muddy now. Like there's something coming in the spring, but what Mark Gurman seems to think is most sure for the spring doesn't seem like quite enough. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a big. There was that also that regulation filing in Europe, right, with a bunch of different iPads,
Lots of iPads, yeah. And
iPhones. And I think, you know, the SE certainly seems like, as we're saying, it seems like a lock, but it's not big. They're not going to have an event just for the SE. It seems unlikely. Maybe there's an iPad Air update in there as well. That seems quite plausible. But even that's very light for an event, unless they want to talk about some other stuff that they've kept wraps on, like a service or something. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I would like to see more in the spring, and you feel like they'd like to spread things out a bit. But at the same time, with all these supply chain problems, I can also understand why they're maybe trying to get their ducks in a row before they release a bunch of products, right? Like feeling like maybe if we sort of build up some inventory, then in September we can ship things in volume as opposed to, you know, kind of running close to the metal right now and shipping only like small quantities of things as we get them.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. But you and I are both like, if they do a big iMac, we're both buying one, right?
Oh yeah. I have spent so much time, I'll tell you, with trying to like deal with little stuff on my Intel iMac, and it's fine, but it's just getting increasingly kind of buggy, janky. I don't know, it, like little things that are just annoying me. And I think about, oh man, I would love to have some Apple Silicon in this. And you know, I cast an envious eye at those with the 24-inch M1 iMacs because they're great looking machines. And who knows? I mean, you floated the possibility of a 24-inch update with an M1 Pro option, which I think is also very plausible. And that would be even harder to resist in some ways, right? If they're like, oh, well, here it is, but now with a even better chip, and it's like, well, that does a lot of what I need.
Yeah.
But there's probably a 27-inch coming.
Somebody pointed out that the Apple actually has a one fan configuration and a two fan configuration with the 24-inch, depending on what you order. And I thought, like, yeah, I can't envision, because some people have said, oh, well, it's not designed for a chip that hot. It's designed for the M1. It's an iMac enclosure. Surely Apple has learned the lesson that you just don't design an enclosure tightly in the thermal envelope of what you have currently. Right. You design it with some room for variability because you want to keep that enclosure for years, and new chips are going to come out and you don't know exactly what they're going to be. And like, I have a hard time believing now, maybe not an M1 Max chip. OK, maybe not.
Yeah.
And certainly not the rumored sort of dual or quad configurations of the M1 Max chip. Of course not. But an M1 Pro instead of an M1 in a computer with fans. Yeah.
Why not?
I think they could do it. I'm going to just assume that they could do it for now. And I would love to see that, because the reason that the iMac doesn't have that as an option is because that chip wasn't out yet when it was announced. And the same is true for the Mac Mini. And I just M1 Pro, all the things. But I think, why not? They did high end, not the highest end, but high end configurations on the smaller iMac back in the day. And really, from Apple's perspective, like, I don't think I agree with the argument that at some point they want to force you into the bigger iMac. Like, if you don't want the bigger iMac, but you're willing to give us a big increase in price in order to put the better chip in the smaller iMac, great, right? Like, that's fine. Right. We make a lot of money on you anyway. We're okay with that. Why artificially create a larger barrier between the one iMac and the other? You know, and there are counterarguments. If you brand it as iMac Pro, then why would you put the Pro chip in the non-Pro iMac? Like, I get it, but I don't know. I'm holding out hope because I like the idea that you might not want to buy a particular model and yet you want the power of that chip. And so you put it in that Mac Mini or you put it in that 24-inch iMac.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, there are limitations, but it's the same thing with the 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros, right? Like, there's different sizes for a reason. And yeah, right. The 16-inch can bring a little more horsepower to it, but I don't think Apple necessarily thinks, hey, everybody is going to buy a 16-inch if they can afford it, right? There are people who just want a smaller laptop.
Right. I think that 13-inch MacBook Pro, if it does continue, will also have, an M1 Pro as an option. Tear out the Touch Bar, but keep it as a low end. But also sell again if you want to buy the low end, small, cheap, quote unquote MacBook Pro, and then add a whole bunch to the price in order to put an M1 Pro in there, I would think Apple would be like, sure, okay, if you want to do that, you can do that. Because I'm really starting to come around to the idea that the way that they differentiate between these three MacBook Pros and the MacBook Air is that MacBook Air is just going to be different. The M2 MacBook Air is not going to look like the MacBook Air we know, and it's going to be, you know, smaller and lighter and quiet and separate from the MacBook Pros. And that gives the 13-inch model of Pro a sort of a reason to exist.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not convinced that it's not on its way out eventually.
I'd be okay with that. But
yeah. It's such a weird little aberration, like a leftover from the old one. In the same way that, you know, there's an M2 Air probably coming that will supplant the M1 that is essentially a carbon copy of the Intel MacBook Air. I think Apple would like to get rid of that 13-inch MacBook Pro. They may keep it around for a little while, as they've done in the past with like older versions at a lower price point to sort of get people
an M2 in it and just leave it at that price so that you can say the MacBook Pro starts at a lower price than it actually does.
Yeah, but eventually, there's no way they're not just going to kick it out.
All right, well, enough of our yakking for now, but we're going to... we're going to say goodbye, and then we're going to play the audio of our live stream from yesterday in case you missed it and you would like to hear it in convenient podcast form, talking more about Apple's results, because we had a fun conversation. Or you can go watch it on YouTube. It's embedded in the post on Six Colors. Thank you for being a subscriber. We appreciate it. I should say before we go, check your email if you haven't for an email from Six Colors where we ask you to fill out a survey about what you do with your Six Colors membership and what you like about it. Obviously, the podcast is your number one because here you are at the end of the podcast. But we sent you an email earlier this week, and if you didn't see it, maybe do a search.
Check
your spam filters and all of those things, because we would like to know. We are planning our plan of attack for what we're going to do for membership stuff for this year, and one of the things that we thought would be a good idea is knowing what you think and what you like and what you value, so that we can not like kill something that everybody loves or change something in a way that's the opposite of how people actually use it, or introduce something new that nobody wants. We want to hear from you and understand the reasons that you're members and what you like about the membership. So check that out, and more audio to follow. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Hi, everybody. It's me,
Hello.
Jason Snell, and it's him, Dan Morin, and we are live talking about money, 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 money. Bonk, bonk.
Money.
It's going to be one of those. Is Jim Cramer going to come and start talking about
hitting things with hammers
stonks?
And bats and stuff? I don't know. Jim Cramer's a weird
Look,
guy. Huh?
It's everybody's favorite time of year. It's the quarterly Apple earnings result, which we cover. We do a lot of it. We've been covering it for a long time. Our fingers are tired. I'm almost but not quite done with my full transcript, where I be sure to transcribe every time Tim Cook introduces himself.
This is Tim.
To the analysts. Hi, Katie.
Today he said, it's Tim.
It's Tim. Yep. Yeah, that
Mixing
was pretty
it
good.
Up.
Also,
Heck,
Dan,
he's a rebel.
I don't know if you were listening right at the very end, but at the very end of the call, they cut to some music, and then you heard a bunch of people in the background being congratulated by someone, and I thought, oh God, their microphone is still on. And then it went off. Anyway, there's fun. The analyst calls are, they try very hard to be boring, and yet sometimes they are entertaining. But we should start with the, we don't know, we've never done this before, but we should start with the big news, which is what we knew all along. I guess it's not big news if they said that we're going to do it, but it is the biggest Apple quarter ever, $123.9 billion in revenue. It's a holiday quarter, and it's their biggest one ever because it's the latest one, I think.
It's the newest one, yeah. I mean, yeah, not only a huge amounts of revenue, but also a ton of profit. $34.6 billion in just pure profit. And I think their diluted shares were like $2.10 or so per share. And it was up, I did some, you know, it was like up like 25% or something like over last year. So a bunch of big, big numbers. I think it's good. 25% sounds like a lot. I don't know. I mean, not if it's like you here have 25% of a pizza, but if it's like have 25% more pizza than you had last year, that's a lot of pizza. That's what I'm saying.
That is good. I accept that thought that it
the pizza metaphor is really bringing this one home.
I'm just picturing a quarter of a pizza, and it's like I don't eat pizza in quarters. That's not, you need to.
It's like two slices.
It is two slices. It's like where they sliced it badly. Wow, we're talking about pizza. It's a thing that we could do. Hey. You know what we do here is charts.
Charts.
So I thought I would show people some charts and we could talk through the charts, and maybe that's a thing that we could try as part of our initial quarterly results offering, because the numbers tell the tale. And then we'll talk about what they said on the call too, but why don't we start with the charts?
Yeah.
Oh, charts on the internet. It's so exciting. This is the total Apple revenue chart. So, that made a lot of money. That's what we're saying. 123.9 in revenue. In terms, we'll get to the chart in a minute. That's the growth year over year. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, it is on an upswing, and the black line there is the 4-quarter rolling average. And so when that goes up, it eliminates all seasonality. It takes the holiday quarter seasonality out of it.
Right.
And you just see it's just kind of going up. That's what it's doing.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at that little dip every year, right, where it goes from holiday quarter and then it goes down a couple and then it comes back and then the holiday quarter.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Yeah. All the way up. It
the
does
Apple money making machine. That's how it works.
It's not stopping. Yeah.
It's not. So why don't I jump us to these are the I try to use the six colors of the rainbow Apple logo and also of the six colors logo to do things in charts, but I needed an extra color for Apple revenue and I just made it a darker green for money,
darker green,
because it's the color of money. That's why they call it money.
Okay,
here is the Apple profit, just because don't forget that all that revenue, they spend a lot of that on stuff, but still $34.6 billion, another record profit for Apple.
It's an unfathomable amount of money, Jason. I think that's what it comes down to is, you know, 34.6. Yeah, all right, okay, it's there on the graph or whatever, but then like billions of dollars, I mean, their profit alone is so much larger than the revenue of other companies.
You know, there's always the joke about like they can't give it away fast enough, but there's truth in that. Apple has been trying to reach what Luca Maestri, the CFO, refers to as a cash neutral position, where they aren't like stuffing mattresses full of $1,000 bills.
Yeah, because what does that get you, really?
And they can't do it because their cash flow, the cash, it flows so very much that they have been doing stock buybacks and they are doing dividends, which they didn't do for a while. They didn't do either of those.
Oh, yeah.
But they've been doing those for whatever, 5-10 years now.
A long time.
And they still just have so much cash.
Right.
And they do some short-term debt, but commercial paper, right? Like, but they got so much cash even now that they could, like Tim Cook could probably like reach down in between two cushions in his sofa in his office and buy a Tesla or something. That's probably what he could do.
not just to be clear, not a Tesla. Entire thing.
No. Yeah. The whole company. Not just like a really sweet Model S. No, that's not what we're talking about here. So let me put over the year over year total revenue change graphic, just because this is what Wall Street looks at, right? Because Wall Street's very obsessed with growth. They care a lot about growth. And it's 11% year over year. So Apple had a really good fiscal 21, and it was, you know, their worst year-over-year growth year or growth quarter was 21%. They had a spectacularly good fiscal year after the previous year was kind of flat.
Right.
They had their sort of like in between. So 11% year-over-year on one level is a more modest level of growth. And I think on the call we heard Luca talk about deceleration of growth.
Right.
Which is not...
deceleration, just the growing slower.
Growing slower.
You're still growing.
Still growing. Yeah. Yeah, which is important. And that's what you see here. It's the 11% year-over-year in the total revenue. Not, like, by some standards, amazing. By the standard of Apple's last four quarters, it's down a little bit. And of course, they said there were they were estimated going into this quarter that they were going to have about $6 billion in missed sales due to supply chain issues. They talked about that on the call a little bit too, although they wouldn't be pinned down. There is no number to pin down, right? Like, you can't actually accurately measure lost sales, right?
What they didn't make, right? They didn't make them,
What is, Who do they, is there a poll they do?
I didn't make several $1 billion this year.
There's a guy outside the store who says, now, if you could have gotten that, would you have bought it? And then they write that down and they send it to Tim Cook and he puts it in his adding machine. And anyway, 11% is still pretty good. Let's flip over to the product categories because this is always the stuff that interests me. I care about the Mac the most, but it's all interesting. Last six quarters, if we look at Mac revenue, six best Mac quarters of all time.
Right. I mean, the Mac celebrated its 38th birthday just the other week, right? And I mean, 38 years, and it's having its best quarters of all time right now. In a world where smartphones and tablets seem to be dominating, you know, so much of what we think about as technology, the fact that a personal computer line is having its best time ever, that says a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, the iPhone is huge, and it is the biggest driver in Apple's business by a lot. But... the Mac broke $10 billion in a quarter for the first time here after 38 years.
Yep.
10.9, a new record by 1.7 billion, like by not a little bit, by an awful lot. And yeah, there's some seasonality there. But if you listen on the call, what they kept coming back to, and there was, you know, I hope they're elbows and shoulders are okay because they were patting themselves on the back, but it was all about Apple Silicon and the M1. And I mean, they're not wrong. When Silicon transition started to happen, the Mac sales just went through.
If you have to look at that chart and look at, hey, what changed, you know, roughly towards the end of 2020, what happened in the Mac world right around then? Oh yes, that was the debut of the M1, right? Just a year or so, a year and a half ago. And as they said, they're a year into this transition. They said a vast majority of the Macs they're moving now are M1 powered devices, which isn't really a surprise, right? There aren't that many more Intel Macs left in the pipeline for people to buy. And even if there were, why would you buy one? You know, like, sure, it's fine. But like, you know, if you really need a Mac right now and the Intel option is the only option you got, fine, reasonable, but there are so many M1 Macs that they have transitioned over, and it's clearly the future. So, you know, no shock there, but it is the fact that the demand is still so strong does say a lot. And they mentioned the MacBook Pro being a driver of that, obviously, and that is, again, despite those supply constraints that they talked about. So that tells you they're basically shipping those things out as fast as they can make them.
Yeah, for sure. I got a year-over-year chart here as well, and you can see it. Like, again, it's been they were only 2% year-over-year, but it coincided with the introduction of the Apple Silicon Macs the previous year, which meant it was a tough compare, as they say. But still, some pretty remarkable year-over-year growth, and it's 25% year-over-year from the holiday quarter of last year. But obviously, the big story is probably this is the MacBook Pro coming out, and they sold a lot of them because
a lot.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Would have sold more.
Hey, are we too excited? Are we too up about I mean, we're not Apple investors, so we're just like, I'm just saying, it's like happy news about things that Apple did well. Let's talk about the iPad, because it's literally the only category that didn't go up.
Yeah, and they did talk about this, and this was in last quarter's call. They also talked about the fact the iPad was going to see specifically supply constraints. So that is like, I mean, if you want a theme from today, it's supply constraints, right? Like, that is the sort of thing that was running through all of this. And we all know about this from, it's been all over the news, basically, for the last year, if not more. So the fact that the iPad was down, you know, Tim made a point of saying the customer demand is strong still. A lot of what it seems like potentially they're missing out on here are opportunities to sell iPads they just don't have or can't move quickly enough. And I think it's interesting, too, to sort of, you know, a lot of times in the past when we didn't have to worry about supply constraints, you'd look at these numbers and try to suss out like, well, OK, where is this product line currently? Are there products that have some pent-up demand because they haven't been updated? You know, that's the kind of stuff we'd be thinking about. But because of the whole supply chain wrench thrown in there, we also have to take into that account the consideration of like, hey, can they literally make enough iPads? Because it's not as though people are suddenly like, you know, I don't need an iPad.
They very specifically said 3 months ago that iPads were going to be hit the hardest by the constraints. And so, you know, they could really like play that back. I thought about this for a future call, maybe of like, can I get the, I want to do this quickly afterward. So I don't have enough time to do things. Like I wanted to get some kind of like interesting clips from the analyst call, but everybody would have to wait a little bit longer. And at least this time it didn't happen, but they did talk about that. And the fact that the iPad was constrained. Somebody asked, and Mac Lover in the YouTube chat just asked about, shifting production from iPad to iPhone because it was the iPhone launch period. And so would you not, if you have to choose in a chip shortage, would you not build more iPhones? And I think that there is some truth in that. Although when asked directly by an analyst, Tim Cook chose to dodge that question, say, well, it's more complicated than that. And he could have said, yeah, but he said, it's not really quite like that.
Right. I thought that was an interesting response because, you know, the question was essentially, are you using too many components for both of these devices that you have to sort of pick and choose which one's going to get the components? And they're like, look, we're getting all of the components we have. And the problem is not necessarily products to put them in. It's we're essentially buying out like inventory from some of these manufacturers of parts. And we are just shoving them in products like as fast as we can. We cannot get enough parts. So yeah, there is some triage, and he did say sort of tacitly, like, yeah, there's a little bit of that happening, but it's mostly just we need a huge volume of stuff and we can't get it. So yeah, somewhere they're going to have to make that decision, and it would not be a surprise if they decided like, yeah, we sell a lot of iPhones. We're gonna put them in iPhones first, and then we're gonna put them in iPads. But you know, it's not necessarily all the same stuff.
I would also say on this chart before we move on that the if you look again at the black line, that's the 4-quarter rolling average. It removes seasonality out of this. It gives you a better idea of sort of the general trend of the product. And even with this quarter, if you look, like this quarter is the best on this chart that isn't in the last 6 quarters. Like if you look at the previous few years, like the iPad definitely has kind of gone up to a higher level here where it was selling in the 5 billions a quarter, and now it's selling in the 8 billions a quarter. And so though this was a, you know, relatively speaking, disappointing quarter for a lot of extenuating circumstances, but if you're an iPad fan, you're like, oh no, are they going to take away my iPad now and destroy it? The answer is no. It's actually, this is a much healthier business than it was. And if you look at year over year, it's the same thing. It's been on such a run that it's actually kind of hard. 14% down year over year in part is because the holiday sales and in general, the sales have been so good the last 6 quarters.
Yeah. And they also, Tim did make a point here as in other places of saying that essentially the next quarter will be better. Like the constraints will be lighter next quarter. He again didn't go into details because he's not going to do that.
They tried.
He is saying people tried to get it out of him. But
what's that
not
number,
gonna,
Tim? And he's like,
Tim's wise.
The number
to that game.
Is better.
Yeah, and less.
It was worse
than this.
It's better.
That was bad. But now, essentially what he said what we've talked about before is how that. Remember how I said that was worse? Well, this will be better. This will be better. Yeah. So I don't know. What does that mean? We have no idea. We'll have to see in 3 months.
But anyway, so let's move on to the iPhone just because the iPhone's enormous. I had to do a lot of just behind the scenes, and my charts are in numbers, and then they're automatically kind of spat out in numbers. But I do the one manual thing I have to do after I put in the numbers is go through and adjust the max height of all the charts where an all-time record was set. And guess what? The holiday quarter is when I have to do that the most. So this is an example of those. This chart for iPhone revenue was set to 70 as the max height. Or actually, it might even been like 68 because 65.6 was the previous record. And of course, I had to take it up to 72 because 71.6 billion, again, besting the all-time iPhone quarterly record by a cool, what, 6 billion. So
it's a lot. Yeah. I mean, and the iPhone is a profoundly seasonal product, as you can clearly see from the graph, right? Like, you know, new iPhones come out in the fall and the holiday season is a hot time to be buying iPhones. So, I mean, that's not a coincidence, right? Apple does that on purpose. They used to release them in the summer years and years ago, but they decided, look, we roll stuff out, you know, we announce stuff in September. It gets rolled out in either late September or early October. Usually they catch like a week or two in that fall quarter, but the bulk of the sales are in the holiday quarter. And they're really concentrating as much there as they can. So, you know, you look at this and you look at Q4 was 38, right? Like it's not quite twice as much, but it's like getting towards twice as much the last quarter. So people are slowing down to buying iPhones because they're waiting for that opportunity in the holiday quarter to go ahead and buy one. And they asked a little bit about the mix between, you know, iPhone models. Tim's not playing that game either, but he did say he gave out some numbers talking about they had the top five models in both the U.S. and Australia in terms of sales, the top four in urban China, two of the top three in U.K., three of top four in France and Germany, four of the top six in Japan. And he did put in an interesting point here, which he doesn't talk about very much, but he said he believed that, you know, we're gaining market share. So a lot of people talk about the iPhone in terms of like the worldwide market share and like how it actually stacks up against all the different Android stuff. And in the past, we've talked about it being, you know, it's a big seller, but like there's a ton of Android phones out there, a ton of cheap phones out there, and it makes up a smaller percentage of the overall market. But it seems like he believes they're actually gaining a little bit of ground there too, which is an interesting statement. So keep an eye on that.
I'll flip over to the year-over-year revenue change chart just so people can see that. But yeah, it is. Somebody asked, one of the analysts asked, basically use the phrase that I don't think I've heard it in this way before, which was that the iPhone is X growth.
I'll put that one down on the drinking game next to our legacy nodes.
Well, I was going to save legacy nodes, but yes, the legacy nodes got us again. The damn it, legacy nodes, you win again. The X growth, the idea there is, oh no, the iPhone is just going to kind of like burble along and it's going to make billions and billions of dollars, but it's not growing anymore. And obviously the Wall Street analysts and investors, they want growth. Growth is the thing that they're banking on. They're not, you know, putting money in this to get that little 25-cent dividend back. They want the stock to grow and they want the company to show a lot of growth. But it's not X growth because, at least potentially, and if you listen to Tim Cook, this was his answer, because the install base is growing because they have a certain percentage of sales that are new to the product,
right.
New to the iPhone, even now. And to your point about the size of the Android market, especially in a bunch of places where Apple's share is really small, that one way to look at that is, well, that's bad. Why is Apple's share so small? The other way to look at it is, look how much room Apple has to grow in that country.
Right. And Tim also made the point here, and this is where if we had like a Jim Cramer air horn, we'd be hitting it, which was 5G. One of his favorite selling points, right, is like, we're just starting on this 5G
transition.
Early
innings of 5G.
Early innings.
5G is apparently a baseball game or a cricket match, maybe. I don't know.
Waiting for the relief pitcher to come in the 5G game. And so therefore, the idea being 5G networks are still rolling out across the world. The phones with 5G are relatively new. People are still going to want to eventually upgrade so they can get those 5G speeds and, you know, crash planes or whatever 5G does, I guess.
Yeah, faster.
Yeah,
they do faster. It faster. Yes, well, it's 5G balls and 5G strikes here. 5G outs in the 5G inning, early 5G inning.
This show brought to you by 5G.
5G. Well, Tim loves it, though. He's on it. Services revenue. This is the laugh out loud chart. It's actually become the most boring chart in the entire chart package because all it does is go up. Tick, 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 tick. There's that one quarter where it went down sequentially a little bit. Boy, that was exciting. But I'm going to flip quickly over to the year-over-year change because this is the part that's amazing. There's no below zero on the chart. It has not gone down in years.
Right.
And you can see here that this is why, again, for people who are interested in Apple because of the products, which is primarily why we are. But when you try to understand their business, why Apple always ends up talking about services, and you're like rolling your eyes like, oh man, Dad, do we have to talk about services again? This chart is why I should, for YouTube reasons, this chart down here is why they do it. Because look at this growth. It's not just like 8%. It's like 20+% growth for the last five quarters. And before that, it was still in the 15, 16, 17. This is not, double digit doesn't even give it enough credit for the speed at which Apple is growing services year over year. And this is why they talk about it. And this is why the Wall Street analysts love it, because this is where you point to Apple's business and say, look at the growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they don't, again, they don't break out a lot of stuff in here. We're not finding out like, oh, how much money did you make from Apple TV Plus? How much money did you make from Apple Fitness Plus, right? Like, they're not going to talk about that. What they did talk about is the number of paid subscriptions across their services, which is 785 million, up 165 million in the last 12 months. I mean,
that includes subscriptions in apps, by the way,
yeah,
because the App Store is part of services.
Right. But it's an interesting number, because I think it points to the fact that there are so many services out there. And sure, there's the question that's sort of lingering over everybody, I think, on the consumer side is like fatigue, like, you know, the service fatigue, subscription fatigue. How many more subscriptions am I going to pay for? And I think Apple hasn't quite hit that point yet, but it's getting there.
Yeah, hasn't hit it yet, though. They keep bringing in new... I think the bundle is an interesting strategy there, too, where they can keep adding services on and stacking them. And although some people are going to get fatigued by it, if they also roll it into the bundle, you're going to get people who come into the bundle, because there's going to be enough in the bundle now to make it worth their while.
Right.
But it's a challenge for everybody, these subscription services. And it's not, you know, Apple's competing with all sorts. Apple's competing with Dropbox, but it's also competing with Microsoft, but it's also competing with Adobe, but it's also competing with Netflix, but it's also competing with Amazon Prime. Like, it's everybody's doing it. And yet Apple still in, that's 24% year over year growth.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of services, a lot of interesting stuff there. A lot of people had questions about content and stuff, but they, again, they don't really delve into that.
That was one of my favorite moments in the call, because although I like it, I listen to the call and I transcribe the call, because I feel like it is one of the very rare moments where Apple will actually give you a glimpse of its thinking, right? A glimpse. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's what they're willing to say and what they've agreed beforehand that they may disclose if it comes up. And that's what I look for. However, you cannot listen to these calls without losing your mind, unless you take joy in things like, this is Tim, like, where the CEO has to explain that it's him, an analyst finding an increasingly bizarre way to ask Tim, tell me the future. This today, we had somebody say, can you talk about your roadmap? I imagine they had to hit the mute button and be like,
what are you, new here?
Like, what? And then in a later question, Tim mentioned the roadmap, because I think he thought it was so hilarious that we were talking about Apple's roadmap, which you do not get to see.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. We're not gonna discuss our roadmap.
So this was, anyway, so when I say it was one of my favorite moments, it wasn't a good moment, but there was a moment where they basically said, Tim, tell us your strategy with Apple TV Plus and services and how you know, it was a good question. It was like, I, Wall Street analyst, want to understand a little bit more about how you view your business. I think that's a totally legit question. Sure. How do you view the role of Apple TV Plus and your investments in it when you look at the landscape of Netflix's investments or whatever? Like, you could really make a good business strategy question. I'm not trying to look at your roadmap. I just want to know. And Tim Cook's response was to just literally repeat what he made in his pre-written opening statement, which was, do you know how many awards we've won?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, they weighed 200 wins. Yeah, there was a lot of that. They did mention, he did have a question about, like, they don't make just financial decisions about content. Like, we try to find great content. It's like, well, of course you try to find
story. We're enabling storytellers.
No one's looking for bad content,
now,
Tim.
Our services revenue is through the roof, but what we're really about is enabling storytellers. Like, Okay. Yeah. All right. I mean, I get you don't want to talk about your roadmap, but I thought that was a legit question. And I thought it was, those are the ones that frustrate me when they, I think the truth is they are so disciplined that they're not going to go off script. And it was not a question they anticipated, maybe. And because I think you could have thrown him a bone there and said, look, this is why we view, this is how we view Apple TV. But instead, and on another question, Tim did this where he ticked off two sentences worth of things he'd already said.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave like a salient point. And it was as if he was stalling for someone to like be like, this is what we can say about this. And then he said it. So I get how disciplined and on message they are. It bugs me sometimes when the question is good and you probably could give him a legit answer that doesn't give away the store. And sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Wearables. This is a much more interesting chart than services because basically because it's seasonal.
Yep.
But it is still interesting that it is,
I mean,
it is upward, but it's seasonal. And you can see that wearable home and accessories still includes products that people buy and they buy them during the holiday quarter,
right?
Like Apple Watches and AirPods to give as gifts. And so here we are.
That is driving a lot of it. You know, they didn't talk too much about wearables today. One thing I think they'd mentioned very, very briefly at the end, and I know we don't have the transcript part of that yet, but they talked a little bit about health. Because somebody asked Tim, like, what his feeling on where he sees Apple going in health. And obviously, similarly, he's not laying out a roadmap or anything. Not going to do that. But he used that phrase that he uses so much. It was like, we're gonna like pull that string and see where it takes us. I don't think there's any question that Tim Cook is interested in health as his, like, one of his top areas, I think. I mean, he, by all accounts, drove sort of the Apple Watch, you know, as a product. I think that reflects very much who Tim is as a person. I think that's something that is like personally interesting to him in the same way that Steve Jobs was like really into music. And so that helped drive some of that. But yeah, I think the wearable category is also interesting. There was a, Jason, I'm sure you caught the question about the metaverse.
Yes. At last, the metaverse is addressed. And similarly, Tim was just sort of like, well, you know, we talked about that. We're interested in that kind of stuff.
It mentions again the I always love this bit because he mentions that, oh, we've got 14,000 ARKit apps in the App Store. And it's like, it's kind of an answer, but it's also kind of not an answer because it's like, well, that's not really what we're talking about, first of all. But you are making a point that, like, you have that technology and you've already kind of rolled it out. Everybody continues to wait for that next shoe to drop.
It is an answer in the sense that the ARKit stuff is part of that strategy that will ultimately culminate in something, but
it's not there yet.
And year-over-year wearables, some of the huge acceleration has slowed down a little bit, but still, it's doing pretty well. Doing pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. AirPods. Yeah.
I have a cat issue going on, but we're live on the internet, you know, so that's going to happen.
Fine.
I'm just trying to make sure my cat doesn't run out and escape because the garage door just opened. It's great. Anyway,
this is what you get on live streams.
That's why we're live on the internet is for things just like this.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a cat.
Oh, I think that's not true. I think they know. I think you really lean into the fact that you're a cat.
Yeah.
All right. It's all okay. The garage door is closed and the cat did not escape. So I can sit in my chair instead of leaving the live stream. Total Apple profit. I already put up money, 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 money. And I think that's it for the charts. Oh, no, there's more charts. I got...
there's always more charts, Jason.
Oh, I got a pie chart. It's my one pie chart. I have to adjust the text every time because I'm dissatisfied with how numbers places the text. So you can see that 58% of Apple's revenue was the iPhone. Mm-hmm. This is not news. iPad down to 6% at this point. Interesting. The Mac has done so well in growing that the iPad has become more of a little sliver.
It is an interesting chart, less for the iPhone part than for how that remaining bit gets divvied up amongst all those other categories. Like, no surprise the services is, you know, the next biggest chunk, but it's not that much bigger than wearables, right? Like, I mean, a few percent bigger than wearables. Wearables, a few percent bigger than the Mac. Like, there's a lot of movement in that whole area right now. I think, obviously, services is poised to, like, you know, take a bigger piece of the pie. But wearables and Mac, I think, both strong businesses right now.
So. And here's my kind of non-pie version of the percentage revenue by product line, where you can see the vast blue sky of the iPhone, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but you can see the pulsation of... of all that services thickness there, and then wearables and the Mac and the iPad. So it's a big part. But services is and wearables, if you look on the left side in the color variation versus the right side, you can see how it's changed. I don't know. It's a neat looking chart. It's the only one of its kind in my chart stack, but I like it. Here's a regional chart, regional revenue. This is the 4-quarter moving average, but just I think it's interesting to get a look and see. America's revenue is doing great. Really, all the revenue, I mean, they said all regions, all geos, I think is the, they tried to not use the term and then they used it anyway. It's internal Apple inside mm-hmm. baseball to call them geos, but all their regions that they do. And I know Europe is, I think Europe and the Middle East and Africa, but they call it Europe, and there's Greater China, and then there's the rest of Asia Pacific and Japan, which are all different. But you can see the growth is up. The growth is, if we wash out seasonality, and it's been doing pretty well. The last year, it's been a good year in all regions, but especially in China, Europe, and the Americas for Apple.
Yeah, Japan was the only thing that was down this quarter, and it was just a little bit down.
Yeah, a little down, crossed with the rest of Asia Pacific. And then if I move to the regional year-over-year growth chart, same kind of thing. Not as much growth as in China for a little while, but still it's still growing in all those regions, the key regions, America, Europe, and China in Apple's business. And then my last chart that I have, mostly because Apple and Tim Cook talk about China an awful lot, is year-over-year greater China revenue change, just to keep an eye on that. And they had four incredibly huge quarters, and then this one's 21% up year-over-year, but it's up over that huge growth quarter of a year ago. And this is after they were kind of kicking around. I think that there's a lot of iPhone seasonality built in here, where China is a market that really wants a new design for the iPhone, and last year there was a new design for the iPhone, and so it kicked it for a year, and we're probably headed back into a flat period with Apple in China.
China is interesting too for other reasons, which a couple of which came up on the call today. He was at one point asked to sort of like forecast the macroeconomic climate in China.
Yeah, that was nice.
Declined to do. But I thought the other one that was interesting was somebody asked about rethinking this was an oblique China question, right? Are you thinking about rethinking the supply chain, given your constraints and given your, what I think the term they use was geographic exposure? And Tim sidestepped that quite a bit by talking about how good Apple's supply chain is, right? He mentioned there's very little time between chips being fabricated and the products going out the door. And like their supply chain is very fast. It's very nimble. It's like really designed to like pump out as many products as possible. And, you know, that's a diplomatic answer too, right? Because obviously Apple's position in China is a bit fraught. They rely heavily on China for the production of all of their products. And that has bit them a couple times, including from between supply chains and just, you know, having to deal with sort of the political realities as well. So he didn't discuss, or should we think about maybe building factories in places that are not China, which they are doing, but it's going to take some time. And in the meantime, Tim Cook doesn't want to say anything that's going to tick off anybody in China who might be upset about that idea.
Exactly right. Well, those are the charts. I hope you enjoyed them. It's talk. What if charts could walk and talk, or at least sit in a chair in front of a computer and talk? That would be it. Yeah. In the call, I'm trying to think of the stuff that I got out of it that we haven't already discussed. The legacy nodes. Generally, the challenges on legacy nodes. And those are by supplier. And that Tim said, I like also their casual way they refer to billions of dollars, because you work at Apple. So saying, you know, we said we would have constraints more than six, and we did.
Yeah. It took a while to unpack that
six.
One. But
that's billion dollars. Six.
Yep. Thanks.
Six.
Sorry. I was just like, oh, we had more than six constraints. We had seven constraints.
Yeah, that's right. But we broke one of them. There'll be fewer now. There may be four, three,
fewer
two, five.
That's
we don't know. We'll see. But the challenge is on legacy nodes, and those are by supplier. So they said we're pretty much just focused on our suppliers. And, you know, Tim loves talking about the supply chain.
It's his thing.
He does. Let's see what else. Anything else hit you out of the Q&A?
I think the only other thing that was kind of interesting, actually, there are two things that jumped out at me. One was there was a question about R&D and how they spend money on R&D, which I thought was interesting. I mean, you know, it was an interesting question. Again, I don't think this was a case, as per your earlier comments, where it seems like maybe they could have elucidated a little bit without just reiterating the company line, because Tim was like, well, you know, we like to work on stuff and then surprise you with them. Like, and it's like, yeah, we know that. Like, but how do you make those determinations on like what things you're going to work on and what things? And I feel like maybe that's obliquely maybe a car question. Like, how do you decide what's a thing that you're going to work on that's just a product, or how do you decide something that's just maybe down the road or something? Not a lot to glean out of that, but I thought it was an interesting question. And then there was a brief mentioned in the talking about inflation, where he mentioned specifically the cost of moving stuff around.
Logistics, yeah.
Logistics.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting too, right? There's a lot of stuff that has to get moved around, both probably internally to like between product, you know, chips that have to go to the assembly line, etc., and then stuff that has to get shipped out.
All those Gorilla Glass screens from the US out to China to be assembled into the iPhones.
Yeah.
And
it was, we know there's tons and tons of bottlenecks in terms of like, you know, ships that just literally cannot get into ports and stuff. So that has them coming and going, I think.
I think so. Yeah, the line about R&D that I thought was a very Tim is, and that I gleaned something about his priorities, which is in terms of deciding where we invest, we look at areas that are sort of at the intersection of hardware, software, and services, because we think that's where the magic really happens and it brings out the best in Apple. I'm not 100% on board with the intersection of services. First off, three streets intersecting is not great. You should probably have some sort of a rotary,
a traffic.
I spoke your language there, Dan, a rotary, a traffic
Thank
circle.
You. Yep. Yep.
Something, it could be dangerous. You're going to have more accidents there. And also services, just is the magic. I mean, the magic, if you define where the magic really happens as that chart I showed you about services revenue going up. Yeah, I guess that's magical. But I'm not sure Apple's services game is necessarily the thing that is that is the secret sauce that brings the magic. I know they want it to be, and I know that they've decided that the intersection of hardware and software is not enough, and they need to talk about services every time. But I was thinking about, like, is the services aspect of the AR product or the VR product or the car, is that where the magic happens? I mean, Elon Musk would tell you that it's $10,000 for full self-driving, so that's a service. I guess.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Apple Car only comes with 5 gigabytes of iCloud storage. So
that's what the 5G is.
Yeah, it's 5G. The 5Gs, gigabytes. 5 gigabytes of storage.
Of cloud storage. That's 5G, the 5G revolution. Yeah, I'm trying to see what else. So, yeah, I'm almost done with the transcript. So I paused it for this video and I'll go back to it. But I'm just quickly kind of diving in here to see if I can see anything else. So there wasn't a lot. I mean, I always dig a couple of things out,
right,
for writing my Macworld column. But I don't know. This was a pretty cool. I mean, look, this is their record quarter. They made an enormous, kind of an obscene amount of money. And so, what do you say? They kind of kept it to. They didn't have to, like. Legacy nodes, everybody already knows about. They already know about the supply chain issues. They already know about the growth trajectory isn't that different. They did, I guess guidance is a place that we haven't really talked about so much.
Yeah.
They aren't doing guidance per se, where they say here's, but then they give a range anyway. So it's like informal guidance, assuming that COVID doesn't impact things worse than we think it is, and then they give some guidance, and they did say that this is one of those cases where there's
the tough compare, the deceleration.
It's a tough compare because the quarter year over year quarter is when
the iPhone launched later last year, so they're not going to have the same results from that. And then they talked a little bit about foreign exchange, another favorite, and how that will be a headwind. There was an interesting bit in there about the challenging compare. They specifically said last year a higher level of lockdowns led to increased usage, which I thought was really interesting too, because it was that acknowledgement of like, hey, when people are stuck in their homes, they guess what they do a lot? They stream stuff, use their tablets and use their MacBooks and use their phones.
I think that was specifically about the services too, that they said that they think there would be an issue where people were driving services because they were locked in.
Yep.
And that may not be the case anymore. So yeah, it sounds like, you know, their story was basically like they think they're going to have a really good, I think they even said they're going to have a record March quarter.
Yeah, I think they did as well.
Yep. So it once another record. The most boring thing you can do if you're writing about these Apple results is just like, it's yet again another, like, let's find something interesting to write about it because it's another record. And so there will be another one, but it won't be as amazingly stupendous as maybe some recent ones. It's going to be that. I think that one growth chart that I put up earlier actually sort of says it, is that they seem to be out of the year where they were growing at 20%,
yeah,
or 25%, and they're back in a year where they're growing at 10%.
Right. More modest.
Yeah.
It's still good. Still good.
Yeah, we don't see any of that. You and me, we don't get any of that. We don't get any dividends.
Down the road, there's a couple guys doing a YouTube live stream about our quarterly results. It's a lot more
boring.
Well,
I can't wait to hear. Yeah, it's not that exciting. It's a privately held company. It's really, I'm not sharing my roadmap with anyone, not even Tim Cook. He can't see my roadmap. My roadmap,
if you want
a
roadmap, go to Rand McNally, my friend.
Is literally, my roadmap is literally the Northern California AAA roadmap. I should probably get on Apple Maps and start using that instead. Well, I think that's it. Did we do it? Did we cover it?
I think we did.
All right.
We covered everything worth covering.
I hope this. I hope people who watched this found this at least a little bit interesting. We thought maybe talking about the charts and talking about the results, because we do sit on that call, might have some use for people who care about this stuff. I know not everybody cares about the Apple business details, and you know, I don't do this for any other company, and I'm glad, because I don't think I could do this as my job. I chose not to be a business reporter for that reason, but I think it's helpful. Anybody who is closely following Apple should try to understand their business a little bit, and I think that this is our one, you know, four times a year opportunity to get a little bit of insight into why Apple does what it does. And it's not a lot. It's not a lot, because Tim is just going to read off that sheet of prepared remarks, and it's not that interesting. But between the legally mandated numbers that they have to release and some small amount of color that they give to the analysts, we get at least a little bit of a sense of what Apple is doing and what their business looks like. And I think that's a good insight to have, even though it's not world-shaking. I was looking at the Business Wire at some of the other corporate results being dropped. Like, Mondelez results came out today, too, if you want to know what Kraft is doing, I think. Is that Mondelez?
Sure, I don't know. I don't. I definitely don't keep track of this.
I was just like, what, Apple? No, just Apple results, please. No other results.
We will not be covering other.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, thank you to everybody for watching our live stream and or playing it back later. If you're not watching it right at the moment, that's fine. All these charts are the same forever now because Q1 2022 is over. Dan, thank you for joining me for this exciting, pioneering for us live stream for Six Colors.
Pleasure to be here.
SixColors.com for all of this and more and all those charts and everything else. Check it out if you haven't already. And if you haven't and you just stumbled into this live stream, well, that's awesome, because we have a site that we write about this stuff all the time too. Bye. Bye, Dan.
Bye.